We are fascinated by lightning, and we should be. It's powerful stuff and one of the most striking, pardon the pun, features of nature. We not only love to look at and talk about lightning, we use lightning terminology for things that have nothing to do with the weather. When something major happens in a person's life, we may say lightning strikes, and obviously not mean it literally. This is the time of year when we tend to get a bit more worried about lightning because it is capable of setting fires in our drier forests and causing other havoc as well. And this is Lightning Awareness Week nationwide. We have two guests with us from the National Weather Service office in Medford. Ryan Sandler is a meteorologist. Welcome, Ryan.
Good morning, Jeff.
And Mike Stavish is a meteorologist as well. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, thanks. Good to be here.
We're just joking that you guys could start a law firm with your name, Sandler and Stavish. When lightning strikes, we show up. But lightning hasn't struck yet, but it's coming certainly around the region. We do expect it at some point. Let's get to some of the basic stuff, and I'm sure listeners will want to chime in with their own lightning stories over the years. What is lightning? Where does it come from?
I'll take that one.
Sure.
Okay, Ryan.
Lightning is complicated. You have lightning occurs, obviously, in thunderstorms, big clouds, and in that cloud is what's called an updraft. So the wind, we don't think of the wind as blowing up and down, but it blows very strongly up in a cloud. And that separates the lighter ice crystals from the heavier hail and rain. And they bump against each other, and that creates a difference in charge as they separate. And so you have these positive charges near the top and the negative charges that start to accumulate near the bottom of the cloud. And because you get all those negatives near the bottom, opposites attract, and you have positives that and the same kind of charges repel. So the negatives go away near the ground. You have positive near the ground, negative in the bottom of the cloud. And then when that charge potential gets so great, you actually get a lightning bolt that forms. You have little streamers that come up from below, and they're called dart leaders, step leaders that come down. And this all happens in a millisecond. And then boom, you get the lightning bolt, and that discharges the energy so you don't have the opposites anymore.
That friction you describe in the cloud, though, between the stuff moving around, is that basically static electricity, like
exactly.
A sweater rubbing against us when we take it off? So basically a lightning bolt is a big sweater removal.
That's it.
It's
wow.
It's a big spark.
It's what? It's a big spark.
It's a big spark.
And how much charge does that carry, Mike Stavish? I mean, what's the energy of a lightning bolt? Does anybody, not that a lot of people have been able to measure this successfully, I guess.
They do measure it. We have a lightning detection networks on the ground, and when you talk about the current, the amps, there's 30, 40,000 amps, and sometimes as high as 100,000 amps and hundreds of millions of volts, up to almost a billion volts in the very strongest charges. So it's an incredible amount of electricity if it could be harnessed.
And why can't it be harnessed?
It's too chaotic. We don't know where it's going to strike, and it's just too much current, and it basically burns everything out when it strikes. You can't just accumulate that power.
And so what are the things that people need to know first and foremost about lightning? I mean, because there's lots of stuff out there about, oh, you know, make sure you get under a tree, make sure you're not near the tallest thing. I mean, are a lot of these things not especially reliable from a meteorological standpoint, Mike Stavish?
Well, I think the chief thing people need to remember, you know, is to get inside when a thunderstorm is moving toward you. And that's what we tell people. When thunder roars, go indoors. That is a coined phrase of the National Weather Service. You've probably heard that. A large part of our Weather Ready Nation initiative is to tell people when thunder roars, go indoors. That's the safest thing you can do. Lightning does injure and kill many people every year. And in fact, it's the second largest killer with storms behind flash floods or behind flooding. It's not something you want to play around with. Every time you remain outside during a thunderstorm, you're essentially risking your life. And if you really want to play it safe, the best thing to do is to go inside. And going in a vehicle is okay, too. Just close the windows.
I was going to ask you about that one, whether being on rubber tires actually gives you a little of an insulation or something.
No. Right. That lightning has gone through miles of air. Think of how good a resistor air is. It's a good insulator, and it goes through miles. The little rubber tires don't do anything. It'll just go right through them and usually blow them out.
So you are not safe to be in a car?
You are safe because of the metal cage. Uh-huh. As long as it's metal, the lightning, the metal conducts lightning well, so it will go through on the top of the metal and into the ground, blow out the tires, and keep you safe as long as your arm's not hanging on the outside and your window's open, as long as you're inside. Now, the sound could blow out your eardrums. It's very loud. You could get some issues. It's going to damage your car, most likely, but you are safe. If you're camping and you just have a tent and you're in the middle of nowhere, go into your car. That's by far the safest spot.
All right, so the car frame basically acts like a lightning rod and carries the lightning, we hope, around you.
A Faraday cage.
Really? Okay. What does that mean?
Essentially, it's a big lightning insulator from the things inside of it, I guess. We actually read about that this morning and joked about it a little bit. But we were discussing a gentleman in history who was a park ranger in the Shenandoah National Forest who had been struck by lightning 7 times. Have you ever heard of this story?
No.
It's an amazing story. This guy was struck by lightning 7 times, and he claims actually 8 times. His wife was struck by lightning. If you read the story on Wikipedia, you'll get a real kick out of it.
And his name was Faraday.
No. But one time he was struck by lightning, he was actually driving his truck, and his window was open. Lightning struck a nearby tree and then was deflected into his truck through the window. And so in the article, it mentioned Faraday cage, and so that's how we talk.
Okay. That explains the recognition there. Ryan Sandler and Mike Stavish are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, meteorologists from the National Weather Service in Medford. We're talking about lightning. It is Lightning Awareness Week. Maybe you have some questions or comments, things you've always wanted to know about lightning, or some things that might have happened to you in your own life with lightning. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Let me ask one from my own experience, because I know I lived on a lake in Connecticut, and one of the neighbors mentioned seeing lightning actually hit the lake and run along it. Does lightning have any particular attraction to water, or is it just anything that just happens to be below it?
It's just where those particles accumulate, the static accumulates, and there's a lot of randomness to that. And it can strike different places at the same time, but it's not attracted to water. And another myth is that metal attracts lightning. It just conducts lightning. So if you're holding it, it's probably going to burn you if you have something metal. Unless you're sticking something pointy up in the air, you're not a target if you're just holding the golf club below you. But as we know, golfers do get struck by lightning because they're outdoors.
Right, and you're usually far from trees out there on the putting greens and stuff. Yeah, not a lot of stuff around them. Then the often asked question, too, is because you hear different versions of this over the years, does lightning strike down? Does it strike up? I think the correct answer is actually both, isn't it?
It is. Usually down. You can't see those streamers that come up. Sometimes there's a famous picture of a teenager in the 70s, very long hair, and the hair is standing up. They're on a mountainside, and that's because lightning is ready to strike them. You get that static buildup. But as far as the bolt, when the streams meet these invisible streams, they can capture them on high photography that can capture that. But the lightning bolt usually comes down. But there are instances where it actually initiates from the ground, but that's rare. So the answer is both, but usually from the cloud down.
What are the circumstances in which it'll start from the ground? Is that a different charge or something?
Sometimes researchers put up these big metal things or a metal tower, and sometimes there's such an accumulation and buildup, it actually initiates from the ground, from a tower.
Okay, so all kinds of strange things happen with lightning. We talked about the voltage and the amperage, and again, with electricity, amperage is the amount of electricity, voltage is the electromotive force. So there's a lot of both in lightning bolts, it sounds like, but a lot of heat too, isn't there?
Yeah, well, lightning itself doesn't have heat. It's because of the resistance of the air, the resistance of objects it goes through, the tires, and that resistance causes that heat. And so you get an enormous amount of heat of 50,000 degrees, hotter than the surface, 5 times hotter than the surface of the sun.
Really, that hot?
Very hot. And most people survive lightning strikes. They don't get hit directly. Most of the hits are indirect. They get part of the current. They never get the full thing. They would die, certainly, if they got the full current. But it usually stays on the outside of the body. But if a little bit gets in there, it could stop your heart. It could give you brain damage. It'll do lots of bad things. And there's even on the internet a support group of people who have been struck by lightning and have debilitating injuries.
Is there any truth to the stories about if you feel your hair stand on end, flatten yourself out, things like that?
No. We used to recommend crouching, but that's really not going to do much. You don't want to lie on the ground if you feel that the static and you think lightning's going to – you don't want that current from the ground to touch you in so many places. It's just better to be standing away from a tall object. There's really not much you can do outside.
If you're out in the open, there's not much you can do. Look for shelter.
All right, but the tall object is the thing it is going to go for?
Usually, yes.
Okay.
But it's very random. There are plenty of pictures of it hitting something small with large hills around it. It's not always going to hit the tallest object.
Let us take a call. We have Paul in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about lightning and Lightning Awareness Week with Ryan Sandler and Mike Stavish of the National Weather Service.
One of the worst jokes I know involves a god, a priest, nun, lightning, and golf, and I'm not going to subject you to it.
Yeah, I think we all know that joke. Anybody older than 35, anyway.
Yeah. So in any event, I used to race sailboats, and I was caught on the Columbia one day by a very fast-moving storm. I haven't heard that piece of this come up in terms of how fast these cells can sometimes develop and move. Didn't have a chance of getting to any kind of shelter, and I've got a 30-foot, 40-foot tall aluminum mast out on the middle of the river, lightning flashing around me. The only thing I thought to do, and that I could do, was to get underneath a construction crane on the Washington side of the river and hope that took the shot first.
Huh. Well, let's find out if that was the right move. Thanks for the
right.
call.
Now, the other question I have is, does cloud seeding have any impact on the development of lightning and thunderstorms?
Okay, interesting. We'll take that from there. Thanks, Paul. So the first part was he on the right track getting near the construction crane and hoping it would take the bolt, which apparently never hit anyway?
Well, those are tough questions. Usually you don't want to be near the tallest object. You better have a lot of confidence that it's going to hit the crane and you're not going to get a little bit of that energy. It depends, I guess, how close you are. You don't want to be too close, but yeah, in theory, that would tend to work, that it would hit that object. But then on the other side, you don't want to be near anything big, and you want to get out of the area that might get hit. So that's a big unknown whether he did the right thing or not, getting under that crane.
And then cloud seeding, which is what? Is it still silver iodide? Is it still
what's cloud seeding? What I know about cloud seeding is what they used to do on the plains, and they would seed clouds to help improve the precipitation efficiency of the storm because they wanted rain to hit the ground. They need rain for crops, etc. So the big motivation behind that is to help the rainfall. Just thinking about it, and I haven't read any research on it lately, I would say more precipitation particles in the storm would probably lead to a greater likelihood of lightning. So that would be my best guess.
They do most of the – there are seeding projects that they're currently doing in Texas and Wyoming, and they're usually seeding on days where they expect some buildups, but nothing really – if they expected big thunderstorms, they'd get their rain. So they do it on these marginal days, so you usually don't see a lot of thunderstorms.
All right. That's a good question there, because if you think it's going to rain anyway, you're not going to do the seeding. But if you think it's on the edge, might not, that's when you go for it. The speed at which thunderstorms move, and Paul brought this up in his questions and comments – they do seem to move awful fast sometimes. They just kind of show up, blow in, do their damage, and then blow out again. Mm-hmm. Is there any particular set of factors that makes that happen? Is it just our perception, or is it something that really does happen?
Storms do move fast. Typically, we'll see 10 to 15 miles an hour of a movement from a thunderstorm, but it depends on the environment. They can move 50 to 60 miles an hour, depending on the speed of the winds and the atmosphere. One thing I think people can mistake at times is movement of thunderstorms versus development of storms. You can see a storm on the horizon coming your way. While you might have a thunderstorm actually developing directly overhead, the storm overhead matures, and suddenly you think that storm moved in very quickly while it was actually just development nearby. With relation to the movement of storms, lightning can strike well outside the main core of a thunderstorm as well. So that gets back to our safety thing, is just because you can see the storm off in the distance doesn't mean you're safe. If it's coming at you, if you hear thunder, go inside. That's the safest thing to do.
We're talking to Mike Stavish and Ryan Sandler at the National Weather Service in Medford about lightning. This is Lightning Awareness Week, and this is a good time of year to get aware of lightning. It's certainly going to be a factor for us We hope not, but probably will be in the months ahead. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions and comments, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So thinking that the storm is far away is usually going to be done by the whole counting thing. So because somebody's probably asking you this about three times a week when you get to the summertime. What's the difference between the lightning visible and the thunder heard, and how that measures distance for you?
The lightning, you see basically the speed of light instantly. The thunder is the speed of sound. It's roughly 750 miles an hour. So in 1 mile only takes about 5 seconds for it to travel. So if you see a lightning bolt and you know that that thunder came from it, and you count to five and you hear the thunder, it's a mile away. And you usually hear a rumble because the lightning it's a bolt, so you hear the bottom first near the ground, and then you hear the top part a little later, so it's a rumbling sound.
All right, but if you get one thousand, boom, it's probably less than a quarter of a mile away, get in.
That's a crash sound.
See the lightning, count until you hear the thunder, and then divide by five, and that's how far that lightning strike was away from you in miles. So just count. How many seconds once you see the lightning, and then divide by five?
All right, so if you count 10 seconds, divide by five, it's 2 miles away.
There you go.
All right, let's take a call from Mark in Redding. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking lightning with Mike Stavish and Ryan Sandler.
Good morning. Several years ago on the 21st of June here in Redding, there were 12,000 lightning strikes all around us within at most 2 or 3 hours. And nobody from CAL FIRE had any memory of this ever occurring before, and I was wondering the likelihood of it happening again anytime soon.
And how many strikes again?
It was over 12,000.
Wow, that is a lot.
Started multiple thousands of forest fires, most of which were very small.
All right, thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, out here, it's pretty rare to get thousands, more than we've seen 1,000 or 2,000 in the region, but talking about 12,000, yeah, that's a very rare in this part of the country. You go to Missouri and places like that, and you'll see that stuff all the time, but not here. You just hope it doesn't happen during the middle of fire season when fire danger is extreme. Then you'll have a lot of fires. I don't remember exactly when that one happened, but last summer we had that one in late July in the middle of the night. Between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m., we had lightning, hundreds of strikes, and that caused all the problems we had with the smoke and the fires last year.
Started several fires. Josephine County, Douglas County, both got hit very hard.
You don't need thousands. A few hundred at the right time.
Even less than a few hundred.
In the right place, in the middle of the wilderness areas that are tough to get to. Will cause, because if you get the right one, you've got a huge complex of fires from just a couple of strikes.
It's just intense heat, then, is it what starts these fires?
Yeah, and we didn't talk much about there are positive strikes that come from the top of the cloud. They go through more air, so they have more current, and they're the ones the researchers believe cause more of the wildfires because there's more heat and more current, and it just starts fires more easily than the weaker lightning strikes.
So generally positive rather than negative are the ones that are going to cause the forest fires.
Greater likelihood, yeah.
What then is going on in those storms that show up in the summer that do deliver either little or no rain and yet have all this lightning with them? What creates those storms in the first place?
Well, we're typically in a hot and dry environment, and the subcloud layer, the distance from the ground to the bottom of the cloud is typically deeper. And that subcloud layer, when the thunderstorm occurs, the rainfall evaporates into it a lot of the time. And so
there is rainfall, it just doesn't reach the ground.
Yeah. So the subcloud layer will evaporate a lot of the rain, and then when you have thunderstorms occurring in that environment, the bolts that hit the ground are not accompanied by a lot of wetting rain at the ground. Chance of a fire starting is a lot greater.
Do the hot days themselves create the thunderclouds, though? Is there something about the upwelling of hot air?
Yeah, convection currents in the atmosphere occur every summer day. Depending on how much moisture and depending on how unstable the air mass is, that will lead to a greater likelihood of thunderstorms on any given day.
And we do have a lack of, compared to most of the country, we have a lack of moisture here. And that's why it's comfortable. It's not humid out, although yesterday was a little bit humid.
Right. Got a little muggy
but,
side.
But that lack of humidity is also, in the cold ocean, is the reason we have more stability and less moisture available in the atmosphere. And that's why we don't see a lot of lightning, a lot of thunderstorms around here.
Give people a couple of more ideas about things they should and should not do around lightning before we part.
Well, you should well, Mike's talked about this a lot. We have a nice sports complex in Medford, and if you're outside playing soccer, in the last 10 years, most of the deaths outside playing sports have been soccer, not golf. Just more people out there playing it, and they don't stop the game when they see a little bit of lightning in the distance. And like you said, lightning can happen quickly. It can develop fast. And so the main thing is, as soon as there's a flash or sound of thunder, you should get indoors. You're not safe in a dugout and under a canopy, patio.
If you're open to the outside air, in other words, you're...
Yeah. If you're inside, you're okay on a cell phone, on a cordless phone. Every time I talk to people, there's always somebody who still uses a corded phone. Mm-hmm. You can be killed using a corded phone. You can be killed in the shower or bathtub because it will go through the plumbing and the water. And it's actually the minerals in the water that carry the current. If it was distilled water you were bathing in, you'd be safer.
Sure. Wow. All kinds of things to think about. And I must, some of those things actually strike home, if you pardon the expression, strike again, because I know in Connecticut we lost a phone and I think a television set too to a lightning strike. And there was always the talk about make sure you're not in the shower when the lightning storm hits because you don't want to have that rude surprise. Okay. Well, we learned a lot about lightning. This is Lightning Awareness Week. You can go to your National Weather Service site to get further details on that. I want to thank Ryan Sandler and Mike Stavish from the National Weather Service Medford office for joining us once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Good to have you guys again.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thank you.